Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Guy Shiraki, Commonwealth Foundation, Broad and Liberty, I hope you're staying safe and dry this morning.
Good morning. Greetings from Colorado, where there's no rest for the weary. Have to work even on vacation occasionally. We came out here for a wedding and have stayed.
Nice.
And so, yes, I am safe from the East Coast rains, but I'll be returning this weekend. Out here, it's fascinating because you're in the cities and it's 98 degrees, and then you go up into the Rocky Mountains and it's 55 degrees or colder. So it's been a new experience for a kid from South Philly to see the Rocky Mountains and drive your car along cliffs. I quickly missed city life when you're driving an SUV along a cliff.
Yeah, but it's beautiful country. So, you know, your reaction as just off the top, because I just wonder about this morning as I look at the Swifties responding and social media erupting and maybe an entire group of individuals. And we saw the effect of the Taylor Swift fan consumer, if you will, and how they impacted, for example, the NFL. And they affect, look, they're a driving force, an economic force. Are they a voting bloc? Does this, I don't know, somehow make them say, wow, if Taylor Swift is not safe, am I safe?
Yeah, it's interesting because we're traveling as a family, and without, you know, getting too much of what we talk about as a family. When this broke, I mean, this was something that caught my kids' attention. Again, our kids are older. They're in their 20s. But, I mean, this caught their attention and caught the attention of their friends as they were texting back and forth or talking on different social media platforms. And I think it was a real life moment because, for better or worse, unfortunately, the assassination attempt on President Trump, I think, was somewhat colored by what people's political perspectives were, or either that was politics, you know, and that's something off in the distance, or I don't like Donald Trump and that's a shame, but I'm not interested. This, I think, caught the attention of teenagers and 20-somethings because this is now somebody they relate to, somebody they see on their phone, somebody they listen to. And I think it was sort of a shocking moment that brought them back to reality that crime is real, bad things do happen. And it got their attention because it was a moment that stopped everything, because what is arguably, she's arguably the most, you know, iconic, well-known person in entertainment right now. And it was a moment where that whole generation just paused and it brought sort of real life to them. And it was real life interrupting their fun. I don't know what the fallout would be, but I will tell you that it was real and impactful as they had to deal with this sudden unforeseen, you know, act of or threat of violence came into their lives.
Yeah, and we'll continue to watch it. I knew you'd have an interesting take on it. I just think, will this awaken a whole different group of individuals who just say to themselves, "Wow, the world has become a much more dangerous place," and the fact that you're seeing across the board, local media, national media, international media, use the word infidel, that these, you know, two teenage guys, 17 and 19 years old, thank God this was thwarted, but they had been sort of activated, if you will, by a major terrorist organization, and that they view Taylor as an infidel. And if they hate Taylor, and if they want to kill Taylor, and Taylor is an infidel, then you are too. Taylor fan, Swiftie. And so it becomes very personal.
Oh, it not only becomes, I mean, it's an excellent point you're making. Look, it not only becomes very personal, but, you know, again, without dragging this back into politics, but the reality is you and I have watched the last year of campus protests and other things where there were moments we scratched our head, you know, with, you know, Queers for Palestine and what have you. Mm-hmm. And it reminds you that really what's going on a much larger scale is a worldwide culture battle. And it's come here to the United States. And look, I don't know who these lunatics were that were going to try and harm a pop singer. Mm-hmm. But as you point out, the idea that she had to be stopped or harmed because she represents American culture and she represents, you know, women being entertainment figures, it sort of brings home to us that there is, unfortunately, a worldwide culture battle that Western civilization and freedom of expression and equal rights for women is not the way of the world. There is a part of the world where you are not allowed to have free speech, where you're not allowed to have fun, where you're not allowed to act out, and you're especially not allowed to do it if you're a woman. And, you know, again, who knows? I hope. We always say, you know, sometimes when a friend dies or something horrible happens in our life, you say, gee, it really makes you think. I hope the kids can go back to being kids. The teenagers can go back to being teenagers. But I hope for the 20-somethings and the 30-year-olds, they pause for a moment and take some reflection out of this and say, there really is a battle between good and bad. And I hate to reduce it to that simple terms, but there really is a battle between good and bad. And there really are people that think that the government or leaders should limit what happened, and that American culture is bad, and that women being equal partners and being able to dance and sing is not something that should be tolerated. And I hope this is a moment of reflection and will impact them going forward. The First Amendment is really important, yeah. And our ability to say and sing and dance and to write columns is critically important. It's what one yes. of the great features of America and Western civilization.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Yeah, and you might say a biased media is a threat to democracy in many ways, Guy Shiraki, which leads me to, you know, one of your latest pieces, Broad and Liberty, that you're obviously working on vacation with the family. But, you start out with talking about the legacy media and the partisan coverage of, you know, Kamala Harris's, as you write, evolving positions on policy. And then you get into fracking, you get into jobs. I'll say this to you and just tee you up and want you to talk about it, Guy Shiraki. But I'll say this to you that I feel like, you know, as far as the media, they're covering Kamala Harris is as if she's a fresh candidate and she's not part of the current administration. It's weird.
Well, it is weird, right, Baton? We've gone through years, the last several years, of watching things with our eyes, hearing them with our ears, and being told the exact opposite. If not in the moment, days or weeks later. I mean, we lived through COVID, and, you know, you talked about it. You covered it from a news angle. You covered it from a political angle, a culture angle. And here we are. I mean, we're not talking about the Civil War. We're not talking about World War II. We're talking about what happened to us 2 and 3 years ago. And we have members of the press trying to tell us that the mandates weren't really mandates, that people didn't really lose their jobs, that things didn't happen, that we watched and saw and felt with our own eyes. And with Kamala, you're right. Look, the whole national story from the Democratic Party and their allies in the media, and that's, you know, whether that's Facebook or the New York Times, the media, this is a reboot. It's a do-over. We're still not sure why Joe Biden left, other than we all know he was pushed out, but we're not told whether it's because he couldn't win or was old. We're still not being told about that. And then we introduce his vice president as if they discovered her, you know, if they discovered her in the Rocky Mountains and they said, here, come in and run for office. She's a vice president that apparently, depending on the day, she's a vice president who was either intimately involved in making sure the Biden administration worked or never met Joe Biden, has nothing to do with this. I mean, she has the audacity to run commercials and says, I see an America where people, where the economy's thriving, where everybody has hope and you don't need two jobs to get by. And you say, hey, time out. You were a United States senator who then went on to be vice president and presided over all of this. You're responsible for the economy. You're responsible for the open border. And what's been frustrating to me is, you know, I summarize it down to this. It's not only that they want you to ignore what you see with your eyes and hear with your ears. It goes deeper. And that is the media distorts things because for Democrats, they want you to pretend what Democrats do didn't really happen. The opposite is true for Republicans. Donald Trump has explained his position on abortion 7,000 times.
Yes.
And yet they continue to say, but that's not what he really believes.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump talks about the First Amendment. Donald Trump talks about freedom of expression. And they say, yeah, but that's not what he means. And that's why I finally had to write my column. The media covers for the Democrats. They tell you, don't believe what you heard come out of the Democrats' mouth. It's not true. And then for Republicans, they say, don't believe what came out of his mouth. It's not really true. And that's the frustrating part for me. You can't have a battle. We can't have a battle of ideas. We can't have a debate if the media is going to tell us exactly what we hear with our ears and see with our eyes is not what we're seeing and hearing. That's the frustrating part. I believe our ideas are better. I believe they have failed. I believe the facts bear that out. Let's have that debate based on reality and not have the media act as a cheerleader or spokesperson for the Democratic Party and Kamala Harris. That's a disservice. And as I say, the Washington Post has been telling us for decades, democracy dies in darkness. Well, they're killing it.
Unions wanted walls. That's one of the headlines. I looked back, Guy Shiraki, I looked back and thought, what did I miss? What did I miss that I really missed Tim Walz, that he really was a top contender, even going back like 8 days ago, 8, 9 days ago. And I always do my self-analysis as, how did I miss him? And then I looked at some of the other local, even local headlines or union trades and union, some of the most powerful union leadership individuals, the unions were pushing for Walz because of the union vote in places like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, obviously. When we think about fracking, energy, jobs, the loss of union jobs, I think one of the largest percentages I saw was actually the Pittsburgh area. It's, you know, tens of thousands of union jobs have been lost. It's significant. So is that a piece of this? And then how do you think that the fracking, climate change, energy, green initiative, I love electric vehicles, I love electric buses, how does it all play together?
Yeah, I look, what I think we're seeing happening is the continuing split between the leadership of different labor groups who are part and parcel of the Democratic Party. I mean, they're essentially the executive board of the Democratic Party. It's the left-wing environmental groups, the media, and labor leaders. But in the case of labor, as you're pointing out, it is a growing split between the men and women who wake up every day and build things, make things, construct things, look for oil, look for gas, look for coal, lay pipe, build buildings, build bridges, and the leadership. And the leadership is stuck as sort of the executive committee of the Democratic Party. And the men and women who actually get up and get their hands dirty and break their backs to build things, they're watching their jobs go away, whether it's Hillary Clinton telling them that they have dirty jobs, or it's been Biden and Harris talking about fracking bans and the end of fossil fuels and the silliness of that. Look, I think this was doubling down. Again, the Democratic Party through Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have talked about unity. I've seen zero evidence of it from Joe Biden's scary speech in Philadelphia, thundering at us against red backdrop lighting like something out of a sci-fi movie, to Kamala Harris picking Walz. She's been for a ban for fracking her adult life, since fracking has been part of public policy, and she doubled down by picking someone who, again, lives in a fantasy world. I mean, my concern with these folks is not just their ideas are bad. They're not based in reality. Banning fracking means that we're going to depend on China, Russia, and Venezuela for our energy. Banning fracking means our way of life that our parents and our grandparents and great-grandparents strive to give us goes away, from air conditioning to freezers to medicines to hospitals to plastics to, you know, it's silliness. So, look, the labor leaders wanted Walz because he's part of what they want. I think the men and women who work, whether they're in Pittsburgh or out in Washington County in southwestern PA, or in Ohio or in Michigan, the people who make cars, the people who are electricians, they can't stand four more years of Harris and Walz talking about banning fracking. Because banning fracking, every time you hear it, just remember it means importing energy from China and Russia. It's importing solar panels from China. It's getting minerals from Africa from mines owned by China. It's bringing in oil. President Trump had us almost to energy independence. And in Pennsylvania, we had the cleanest air in the history of recording the cleanliness and the particulates in air. That's where Donald Trump left us. President Trump left us where America was inches away from being entirely energy independent, and Pennsylvanians had the cleanest air of our lifetime. And against that backdrop, Biden and Harris, and now Walls, who's even to the left of Harris, if that's possible, talk about banning fossil fuels in a way that endangers not only our national security, but ruins it. So, look, I think you're going to see more and more folks in labor, the men and women who actually work for a living, realize, you know, the Democratic Party and this ticket is the most left ticket ever. And to vote for Harris and Walls is essentially to say goodbye to their jobs and all the hard work they did to support their families. It makes no common sense. And I think there's going to be pushback. And I think you're going to see it in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Minnesota and Wisconsin and places where people get up in the morning to build things.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you. I definitely do. Guy Shiraki, thank you so much. Love your insight. Thank you. And, you know, you're amazing calling in. I didn't realize when we had set you up that you were on a family vacation this week. So thanks for still fitting us in. We really appreciate you. Thanks, Guy.
That's it. I'm happy to do it. And remember, out here, it's still early. The kids are all asleep. We got a long day ahead of us. Thanks so much, Dawn.
Thanks, Guy.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.